This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the 5-Year Plan Podcast. Are we doing wave? Are we doing wave?
Different type of thing, isn't it?
So this is a special new interview series that we're starting on FYP. Jack Pierce is here. Jack, how are you?
I'm fine, Jim. Thank you. All good. Yeah, excited by this slightly different venture that we're undertaking this season.
Indeed. So the season's nearly here. Season's around the corner. So we're dropping this as a little surprise. We did tease it on social media. Little surprise for our followers that we are starting a new monthly interview series. And I'm delighted to say that series is sponsored by our pals at Eternity Home Finance, who are a Croydon-based Croydon-based palace-supporting, family-run mortgage and protection advisors. From getting on the property ladder to planning your retirement, email info@eternityhomefinance.com. And for a free consultation, quote the code FYP. I'm sure everyone knows that by now. And they were delighted that I screwed up the first advert of the new series. But you know what? It's just, we keep it real in FYP. That's what we do. That's what we do. And you know what? This series is, we've booked a few in already. I say we're keeping it real in this series. Got some good guests, haven't we?
Yeah, I think we are. It's kind of a follow-on. We sort of trialled this during the World Cup, didn't we? We had three interviews, Aaron Wilbraham, Ben Bailey-Smith, Doc Brown, and Rebecca Lowe. And we got some really nice feedback about those interviews. So we thought, why not go for a longer run? I mean, you're a theatric darling, so you know you know all about kind of short runs before getting the kind of longer gig.
Oh,
so
we all dream of an extended run.
So, yeah, we thought we'd give it a go this season. Yeah, this first one was a hoot to record and, got several other kind of done and booked in already. So, yeah, very excited to see what the series brings and hope listeners enjoy them.
Indeed. So this is being released 2 days. So the first Wednesday of every month, patrons are going to get it. First Friday of every month, legacy fans, the rest of our family are gonna get it. So if you want to hear it earlier, do join up to our Patreon, patreon.com/FYP podcast. And that's it. So get yourself into the rhythm of first week of the month. You're going to get an interview from familiar palace faces from the palace family here at FYP. And as you said, the first one, I mean, we knew this would be good, but we probably couldn't have asked for a more charismatic first person. It's the one and only, of course, Johnny Ertel. What we should say, Rob Sutherland joined us for this interview as well. So he is on the call as well. Meant just to make use of his German, essentially. But this was what we could have done. In fact, we did chat for about 20 minutes afterwards, after we stopped recording. What a guy Johnny is.
Lovely guy. I mean, you say Rob joined for his German. Johnny speaks better English than the three of us do. He's unbelievable. It was an absolute joy to chat to him. And as you've said, when you've interviewed other members of the 2010 team, just that group just had something about them. And Johnny talks about the group so favourably, his time at Palace so in such a beautiful way that it'll take listeners straight back to that time. And he kind of broadens out, not just talking about Palace, just his time in English football is just fascinating. And the fact that he, where his love of English football started and where he finished, it's a good story. And he's great. He's crazy, but he's great. So, absolute joy to talk to him. And hope listeners enjoy it.
Was there a Johnny Urtel chant? Just sort of thinking now. I don't remember.
I mean, the mists of time have, I think, confused me to thinking that DJ Otzi might have been something for Johnny Urtel, but I think Austrian. No. Hey Baby. I'm not going to say.
Oh, this. Right.
No, well, listeners turning off less than the 2 minutes in. But
there wasn't a da-da-da-da Johnny Urtel. Was that one or have I made that up?
Can't remember.
No.
I can't remember. Okay. I mean, we do talk songs and music with him, so, you know.
We do.
Listeners will get that fix. Johnny Urtel, what a guy. And, doing a lot of interesting things now, which listeners will hear about as well.
Absolutely. Very interesting.
In fact, listeners, play a game with yourself right now and write down two things that you think Johnny Urtel might be doing right now. I guarantee none of you will get both of them.
Yeah, absolutely. He's like international man of mystery. He can just do a bit of everything.
He is. He's kind of the like 9 to 5 007. Like, you know, it's all by the book, but he's doing a lot of things.
He's sort of halfway in between 007 and Johnny English. I don't know whatever the middle ground is.
But yeah, very good. Very good listen to him while we interview. I hope listeners enjoy it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we should get into it. So this is the first of our interview series that we're going to have all season long. And it's the one and only Johnny Urtel / Johnny Turtle. Slash, I think I'm the only one calling that. It's the legend, Johnny Urtel on FYP. Back to the 5 Year Plan podcast, sponsored by Eternity Home Finance. For a free consultation, email info@eternityhomefinance.com and quote the code FYP. I'm delighted to say that joining us is a man who only spent 2 years in South London, but left a big mark with the Palace fans. And of course, played in that epic game at Hillsborough that not only saved Palace's future, but also cemented him as chief dancer on tables in changing rooms. It is, of course, the one and only Johnny Urtel. Johnny, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Hi, thank you very much. I'm well. What an introduction, to be fair. And I will never forget our dance on the table. Yes, it was quite a story at Palace. I will never forget my time. Wonderful.
We will come on to Hillsborough, of course, because that is just an iconic time for all Palace fans. But before we even take you back to the beginning, let us know what you're doing now, because Palace fans are always interested into what ex-players are doing at the moment. What are you up to now?
At the moment, I'm TV pundit for an Austrian broadcaster, so television company, and I cover the Champions League, the Europe League. We have the European qualifiers, German Bundesliga, so all across Europe, basically. We do some analysis of the games and some talks with other experts. And then I'm also in a leading executive role within the brand Red Bull, where I used to work together with Neymar Jr. Over the last couple of years. Because he's a Red Bull athlete, and we invented an event around him and with the brand Red Bull. That was Red Bull Neymar Juniors 5 called. And this year we have the next stage with Red Bull Photo Score, where I've also been to the UK with Trent Alexander-Arnold, because he's a Red Bull athlete, so we work together with him. This is also what I do in my self-employment role. And one of my biggest tasks is at home here in Austria. I run a timber business. So very much in sustainability, in to forest woods, to like understand the nature. And on top of that, actually, the bigger thing what I do, it's a dad of two little nuggets with keeping me busy all day long with a beautiful wife. So, yes, I'm a dad full on, what I really enjoy. But life is good. I'm really thankful for everything. And every now and then I'm back in England to see some friends. And also what I came across just recently, I'm preparing managers for the time abroad. So I just got a job offer. It was a couple of months ago where a well-known manager called me. Hey, Johnny, I would like to go abroad. Can you give me some English lessons? And it was more than English lessons. It was like preparing like training schedule, a weekly training schedule, or just preparing for a different country. And because I'm here on this podcast, I can just relate back, or I have the experience to live 8 years in England. And for a lot of like managers or players, I can give them some advice. And so that was quite a nice story.
Would you fancy asking Neymar and Trent if they maybe fancy a move to Palace at some point? I feel like you could be a little bit of a scout there for us.
I had a good chat with Trent. I said, look, back in the days of office with Palace, I've never played in the Premier League like you do, but I had a fantastic time there. And he said, maybe there will come a time. Never say no. Yeah, never. And with Neymar, I mean, it was quite interesting to know him from a personal level, you know, like everybody knows him, the Brazilian superstar, you know. And then we went 4 times to Brazil, we executed the event, and I got to know his family, you know, and it's unbelievable there, you know. They have 200 million people, you know, and he have the burden of delivering for 200 20 million people living in Brazil, and everybody want to touch him, you know. It's not like clapping their hands and stand up because he was winning something. For them, it's unbelievable because he comes from the favela, from the poorest of the poorest. And we executed the event there where he grew up. And so it was very emotional for the family and him having this event, bringing together the world, because it's an amateur like event we are organizing. So it was quite a nice story to work together with those athletes in terms of that. And back with my experience, I've been also a football player, then, you know, it's easier to talk about things then. Yeah, because we have something in common.
Yeah, I also feel that weight of expectation with our 200 million listeners as well. So I can definitely understand where Neymar is coming from. let's move on to your move to Palace. How did the move to Palace come about? What was the connection there, and what were your thoughts about moving to Palace? You didn't know much about them at the time.
Yeah, I make it short, to be fair, because it all started when I finished school. I read 2 books from Nick Hornby. It was Fever Pitch and About the Boy. And with Fever Pitch, it was great. With Fever Pitch, it got me. I think, Johnny, you need to go to England. This is the place to be. And so I started then at Sturm Graz. I moved to like the champions in Austria and won the cup with Austria Vienna. And then I said to my agent, then, look, I'm 24, 25. I need to go abroad. I need to go to England. Do you know anybody? And back in the days, it was like difficult. We just had Porchana and Emmanuel Pogatetz there playing for some good sides. And then he said, wait a little bit. So I think my agent called a friend, and the friend called another friend, and he called then his friend, and I ended up for a trial at Palace. So, no, it was a great story, because Neil Warnock and Mick Jones, they were looking for an international player who can play different roles, a versatile role, as a right back, as a holding midfielder, or as a center back. And I said, look, you know, if the invitation comes, I'm in 10 minutes in the plane. I go to England, wherever it takes me. And I was so lucky. I ended up at Palace with this 4 days trial. And I sat down then with Mick Jones, and he said, Johnny, you fit into this team. You're a Crystal Palace player. And I said, great, but, you know, I didn't know much about like the English football world, you know, and out of a sudden it opens a completely new horizon for me. Okay. It was fantastic, to be fair, you know, and I was really eager then to join and to start. But Neil Warnock gave me a hard time at the beginning, to be fair. So it was really hard, but he learned me all the lessons I needed to learn in English football. And that's the reason I stayed for 8 years in England, and I would never, ever miss a minute. A very hard time, but it was the best time, because he was very honest as a manager, you know, Neil Warnock. Whenever you speak to my friends or, you know, Sean Derry or Darren Ambrose, you know, all these likes I played with, I mean, we'll never forget him. So he was a great manager, a very honest manager, and I learned my trade of him.
And Johnny, he's still managing, still doing what he does. I think he signed on another contract for Huddersfield for next season.
I mean, this is what he does best. Look, yeah, how many promotions he got, you know, in a way I could not believe it. You know, I come from Austria to England and then, wow, you know, it opens another world for me, you know, with like the attendance. But training-wise, you know, I thought, where am I, you know? But, you know, he got this ability to really mold a team with characters, and it was brilliant. You know, it was really hard because I wasn't playing at all. I thought with an Austrian international, I was in the European Championship squad in 2008, and I came there, and of course I need to play, you know, but I needed to adapt my game. I didn't understand at the beginning, and I was together with Jose Fonte, he was my roommate, and he said to me at the beginning, Johnny, when you wear these boots, you know, these colored boots, Neil Warnock, he won't let you play because he likes black boots. No shiny boots from Austria. I really like pissed myself a little bit because I was new at the trial, you know, and I didn't have any black boots, you know. So at the end of the day, it was then fine because I convinced Neil Warnock that I had something, you know, as a player, but I needed to adjust, you know. I built up my upper body, you know, strength-wise. That was the first step, but I wasn't better than the rest, you know, and knew at the time I needed to be better than the British player, because I come from abroad. Why he should pick up an Austrian skiing instructor in front of like British players to disturb the changing room? As simple as that, to be fair. And so I started off with like visualization, you know. So 2008, I did it myself. It comes from intrinsic motivation for myself. I prepared myself as best as possible for the opponent, okay? Like, I closed my eyes, you know, I think when I walk out the tunnel, when the music is playing, when I stand at Selhurst Park, when I looked at the stands, because I need to be better. And this was the 15% or the 10% who made me a better player, you know, because he was giving me the hard time. Because I needed to be better as a foreign player. And this was my task. And I remember very well the first game, it was horrible. It was at Leeds United away, 4-0. I played right back, you know, on the left-hand side, two times over my side, the cross is two goal. Okay. The foreigner. Okay. On the bench. The next game, another disaster. The third game, another disaster. And then the fourth game, actually, I took my chance at Palace. And I had a really good game. I remember Shefki Kiuchi scored and Victor Moses was on top of his game. And then I played against Sheffield United at the last day of the season in my first year. And I played my best game. And you know, with Neil Warnock's history about coming from Sheffield, it's hometown club, basically. He said to me then, Johnny, the next year, I like you. We give it another go.
Did you find it difficult to adjust to English culture in terms of, were you able to speak English at the time when you moved to England, at least conversationally? Or what was the adjustment like when you first arrived at the club?
When I first arrived at the club, I engaged or I spoke to the senior players. And it was not that my playing skills, they were monitored. It was just my character. My character has been monitored. And this was the main thing. Because Mick Jones said, look, you're an Austrian international, you can play football. But it's about your character, if you fit or if you can adjust to the British football. And yes, it was very hard for me at the beginning, very hard. Because I needed to learn the trade. My English was all right. It was cool English. But I had always, for me, like the task to really dive into the culture and to understand it. So I had my own vocabulary book. I was reading Harry Potter or all the books so that my English became better and better. And during my 8 years or 8 year spell at England, then I was always the one who represented clubs, but I was from Austria. You know what I mean? It was like I came always to this role at Portsmouth that I was like club captain for 4 years at Sheffield United after my move. You know, I was like spokesman of the club. And so I really learned this trade at Crystal Palace, what I'm really, really thankful for.
That really, I think that it sounds like you really adapted to that role of spokesperson, and it actually is an affirmation of the kind of character that you had, and that you absorbed all of that and you took that out and basically became a leader it yourself. And do you think that has helped you since, in terms of once you've left football, that leadership skill that you've learned has played a part?
Yeah, I wouldn't say the leadership skills. I would more say the time with myself, you know, to really have the time. I wasn't playing. I wasn't in the squad. I was traveling and I was waiting for my chance, you know, and I was so patient all the time. A lot of players would have left, but I said, look, I'm in England, you know, I needed to open up, engage or like get familiar with the culture, with the language, with the people. And I knew it exactly. Once I opened up my character, you know, then everything was like free flowing, you know, and the likes of Sean Derry, Clint Hill, Danny Butterfield, Alan Lee, we were made of the same wood, basically. We were all honest players, you know, and we created a team spirit I've never come across before. And we had a good mix of like experienced players and young players coming through. So we had a really good balance, and they took me under the wing, you know, and they said, Johnny, you're not Johnny Ertl or Johnny Turtle, Johnny English, I became the Austrian ambassador. No, it's true. And they loved me and I loved them. So, you know, we went out together. Neil Warnock, he gave a day off, but we went to the gym together the next day because we were professionals. We were at Lloyd's, I think the Lloyd's gym, we were swimming. So back in those days, we were more self-managing players. Nowadays, it's a little bit different, but I think a lot of players were ahead of their time in my squad because they really self-manage them. And that's the reason I think we had success, you know, with the points deduction, with the administration, difficult times. But we were so close together, like a team. We were just, yes, I mean, we were really close and the best dressing room I've ever had in my life.
Johnny, sorry, Rob, but I was just going to say, we'll come on to the 2009-10 season because it's obviously such an important season. But I think your first start was at Leeds, as you referred to, but your actual league debut, that's what the internet tells me anyway, was a substitute appearance in a game in which a current Palace player made their league debut for Palace. Do you know who that player is?
You ask me things.
Sorry for the quiz. Nathaniel Klein made his debut against Barnsley in that game, and you came on for the last 10 minutes, your first appearance in a Palace shirt, and he's still at the club. I guess it's kind of the story of time in that he's still around, having left the club and then obviously come back for Palace. But it sounds like that first season, as Rob said, as you were acclimatising, moving into that kind of second summer, having had that conversation with Neil Warnock after your a performance against Sheffield United, did you feel a lot more comfortable just going into that second season? Obviously, you're comfortable with the group that you're in, but are you feeling better about your own form and your place in the squad?
Yes, because the first year, I was really struggling. The first part up until Christmas, I was really like, I wasn't playing. I lost my place at the Austrian national team. Nobody was interested anymore. There was also some thoughts of going abroad on loan. But, you know, Mick Jones and the gaffer, Neil Warnock, said to me, no, stay, you know, you will get your time. And then he said to me something I will never forget. He said, Johnny, you're like glue. And that was my knighthood. For me, it was like the biggest compliment I've ever heard in my life. He said, Johnny, you are holding the team together. You're like glue. I need you. You know? And when he said that to me, and I know he's very honest, then I thought, he likes me, you know? Because Neil Warnock was like a manager, you know, Johnny, I need you, or Johnny, you're shit. You know, there's nothing in between. Yes, it is. But, you know, So I came across so many managers in my life. I walked in a gym, in their office, and they were just beating around the bush, you know, without telling you, you know, what they think, you know, to be authentic. And so I really rate him highly because sometimes he was too authentic, but he was honest. And so I felt, yes, coming back to your question, I felt much more comfortable. And I knew I was ready. You know, I prepared myself with like my visualization or like with my cognitive training, what I developed. I was a Rolls Royce, you know, back home. For me, I didn't take any days off in Austria. I was like training on a higher attitude, you know, so that I came back and be the number one in running, for example. Okay, number two, number three, because I come from abroad, I need to be better than the rest, you know? If somebody comes from Austria after preseason with like 10 kilo plus, I can go back home. You know, so it's simple as that. And I knew at this time what I needed to do in terms of performance, okay? And for me, it was clear, the second season, it's my time, you know? It's now or never. And yeah, it really took off, to be fair. I will never forget. It was more than 50 games.
That second season, you played three times the amount of games you played in your first season at Palace. So that trust between you and the manager was demonstrated by how regularly he selected you in that second season.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that was fantastic. Maybe this was a text message coming in from Neil Warnock. Huh?
I imagine that.
The visualization is really interesting, and I think that probably a bit ahead of its time. I mean, that's something a lot of players do now, but maybe in 2008, 2009, maybe wasn't as common. But I also want to ask you about Neil Warnock. We've been lucky enough to have quite a few of those Hillsborough heroes on the podcast: Darren Ambrose, Sean, Paddy McCarthy, Danny Butterfield. They've all had so many stories about Neil Warnock. In Danny Butterfield's episode, we had to delete half of them because they were not fit for broadcasting. So I'm sort of, are there any stories about Neil Warnock that you could share us that are fit for broadcast?
Oh, where should I start? I think the best man to ask is Danny Butterfield. Look, there are so many stories. I mean, after 2 years... Oh, after 2 years, he showed me a book, you know, and he said to somebody, if he can translate to me the book, because, you know, I come from abroad. Oh, God, Neil Warnock. But yeah, I think the best thing is to ask Danny Butterfield, you know, he saved all those memories and stories. So it's just popping up every now and then, you know, it was just his character. I can't even tell you right now. There's so many funny stories about him. The way we went to preseason camp, maybe Danny told you when we had barbecue at his place and we played golf. Unforgettable for me. So, you know, when he invited us for barbecue and so on, or when we had before the game, you know, with the Proclaimers and Walk 500 Miles and our songs and everything, when we danced, you know, he'd want to came in and shook his head, you know, and turned around, went back to his office because he couldn't believe what he saw. But he knew that the team is absolutely fine, you know. They were managing themselves, and he let this go. So in terms of that, so he understood very well, you know, the dynamics of the team. And yes, in terms of funny stories, please, you know, ask Danny Butterfield, because I think he has tons of stories.
Well, that's a good time to plug that episode. People can go back and listen to that now. It's about 2 years old now, but well worth a listen. That was a great night with Danny. Let's move on to that second season. And in particular, I guess that Newcastle trip where you guys fly to Newcastle, land in Newcastle, get the news that Palace have gone into administration. And I'm wondering what your memories are. But as we go back to that time, when you're talking about this group of players, and we've heard it so many times from the other players in that group, of what a special unit it was. I was just thinking, if any other Palace group of players had got that news about administration, I would have been worried. But it was really obvious that this was a bit of a unique moment in time, that this group of players probably could have dealt with absolutely anything, including these text messages about administration.
We had the best dance up in Newcastle after this news. So, you know, with like our two songs we played before the game, this was phenomenal. You know, our like fitness coach, he did some breakdancing. I was sweating. You know, we didn't even need a warm-up anymore. Guys, imagine. No warm-up needed. We were out there and we had so much fun. But I think we knew that the club was not in bits, I would say, but the club struggled. And it was down to us, you know, to also not only save the club, but to also show some character. Because after that, Neil Warnock left, Victor Moses got sold, and youngsters came through then, through this time. And we knew we need to stick together. We don't know where we end, you know, and a relegation is never, ever nice. And we were fighting for every single point up until the very last day. And we created a team spirit where it was like us against maybe the rest of the world or the rest of administration. And it was a very good leadership skill from Sean Derry. I remember when, before the West Brom game, it was the last game at home, and the old training ground, there were some big bushes or I don't know, trees. And he took us, just the team, over there. And he said, really, guys, it's down to us. You know, it doesn't matter who's coaching us. It's down to us how much we believe in it, you know, and how much we can really care about this club where we are playing and spend so much good time. And we can also achieve something, yes, we can write history or something, you know, with the 10 points deduction. And that was very good going into the last two games with like the speech of the talk of Sean Derry. It was quite good. I very well remember this moment. But yes, it was down to us. And you know, all these team members or the squad, I could trust. There was no rotten egg in the squad or something. It was just honest players. The senior players, they were all honest. You know, so very authentic players, and we had some gifted youngsters, so it was a good mix.
How did you deal with the kind of departure of Neil Warnock and his move to QPR and Paul Hart coming in? Did that affect you, or do you think that kind of mentality you refer to, it didn't really matter who the manager was, you group of players were going to get us over the line anyway?
That was not easy, I would say, because he was a very important figure for the club, for the players, but then it got us even closer together as a team. His departure, because he was departing, Victor Moses left and thought, who's next? What's going on? Can we still play? And so it was down to us. And all of the players were just fighting for their own future. It's not like with the club, you know, hey, have a decent end, we don't know. So there was a lot of insecurity, but actually we were giving also a lot of hope as a team, because we were never ever giving up, if that makes sense. And you could see that on the pitch. We were never giving up, not a single game, although it was very difficult and we were grinding out some results, but we never gave up, and that was really cool, yes. And with Paul Hart coming in, he was very like, he was humble, he was calm, the completely opposite. But the biggest move was actually Dougie Freeman also to get into this club, because he knew the players. I played with him at the start in my first year. So, and he was the managing person then, you know, between the players and between the lines then. So that was really, really helpful. And he got a lot of like professionalism back within the team as well.
Leading into the Hillsborough game, What were the kind of emotions that you were dealing with in the lead up to that? Was it calmness, or did you, you know, I think you said you roomed with Jose Font, but he'd left by that stage, hadn't he? So who were you rooming with at the time, and what kind of conversations were you having with them on the morning of the game? What was the kind of the feeling in the squad?
Yes, Jose left to Southampton, exactly. Yes, and my roommate was Alan Lee.
At this time.
Of course, Alan Lee. You know, I've been invited to
just,
his wedding.
Just one or 11 Alan Lees? How many are we talking? Just the one, I'm guessing.
Do you know the chant? We all dream of a team of Alan Lees. That was the Palace chant at the time. But so you were rooming with him, and was that? I mean, he scored a goal. So obviously, afterwards.
Look, I mean, when he's rooming up with me, I need to prepare him well that he needs to score. But I was very nervous because I had a trapped nerve against West Brom. I trapped my nerve. And
from the previous game, the Monday night.
Yes. Yeah. The Monday night game, I trapped the nerve and I couldn't walk. I just trained, I think, half an hour the week, and I needed to play desperately. So I had like a fitness test in the morning in the hotel, went out at 8 o'clock or 7:30 with the gaffer, and I just tested my body and everything. And I don't know how many painkillers I had in my life on this day. It was too many. But anyway, I just thought this is a game I needed to play, and I was very nervous, but this was normal. And then leading up to this game, well, it was the biggest game with the biggest emotions, the best day of my football career. And after that, it's it's nothing, you know, and then comes another game. So this game is very, very special. Not only because of like the storytelling, but when we arrived behind the goal, it was just red and blue, all the balloons. The support from the Palace fans was outstanding. And then it was a packed Hillsborough with all this history. And then, you know, they were one place behind us and they needed a win. We needed a draw. And then it all started. We were leading up 1-0. And then before halftime, 1-1, I don't need to tell you that. And the striker, you know.
Yeah. Breaks his toe.
Leon Clark, yeah.
Leon Clark broke his toe. I was thinking, what's going on here? Because when you receive a goal before halftime, it's shit, basically. You know, it's not
it's just momentum, isn't it? It's a change.
It's just the momentum, you know? And then he broke his toe. I thought, I needed to laugh, actually. I've never seen it before. And at halftime, we were really calm, you know? We were really composed. As a team, we were very, very composed. We know what we need to do. Okay, so that was our biggest strength. And then Darren scored this great goal, the 2-1. And then Alan Lee got off, guys, when you remember. And who came on for Alan Lee?
We don't talk about him.
Okay. <Stunned you. laughs>
Exactly. And then he needed to mark a player, you know. It was like the centre-back, you know.
Aaron Pearce.
Yes, there, yeah. And he forgot where he was, and it was 2-2. And then, so I think a second felt like an hour.
Yeah.
So this was my feeling. But Paddy McCarthy, I think with his heading skills, he headed everything out. What I think he had 25 headers in 2 minutes. So, but it was also like the games before, we were really grinding out results, and it just showed our character and the belief. And now, guys, I tell you what actually the thing, I said it to Deza after the game. When we were looking at the eyes of Sheffield Wednesday, okay, of the players, they were scared and we were not scared. I very well remember, you know, you shake hands, you go through each one, you know, and I was focused, you know, with this second season, I know exactly what I was doing. And I was looking in their eyes and they were scared. They were really scared. And I said to Dessa, look, I knew it from the feeling from the first minute on that we are going through this game as a winner, you know, overall. But it was the captain and then the goalkeeper, and they looked in their eyes straight and they looked like, but they were playing at home. They had a lot of pressure also.
Huge stadium.
Yes, home stadium as well. And at Hillsborough. And that was actually, I had this feeling from the beginning that that we are going through. Yes, and then everything was history, because I think that the president or the consortium wouldn't have taken the club over, you know, when we got relegated. So it was really history in the making.
Really? So, you really, I mean, we talked about this to Paddy McCarthy and to Danny Butterfield, but you essentially started the ball rolling with where Crystal Palace are now. Like, every moment that has happened in the last 10 years can be traced all the way back to that moment at Hillsborough.
You know, it just doesn't happen.
No, it felt like a birthday for me also. Look, the 2nd of May, I mean, 2010, it's like, for me, a bank holiday every year. Yeah. Why not?
Yeah. Not really. It should be for all Palace fans.
Yeah. No, it's like, for me, it's a very special, special day.
Go on.
Yeah, also because the feelings and the emotions, I remember after the game, you know, when you had the podcast with Paddy, he will always tell you when we stopped over at the petrol station and, you know, we got standing ovations everywhere. And then we went into a club at Beckenham. I will never forget, or I completely forgot all these stories because I couldn't remember anyway. So it was all, I felt like a Rolls Royce going into my holiday. I felt like I conquered the world. That was my emotion. And 8 days later, I met my wife. It's perfect, huh? So, wow. You know, everything was coming together, because I met Selma then on the 10th of May, and I told her the story the week before, where I've been with all the emotions and in the north of England, what we did. And it was a great feeling. I will never forget.
From Alan Lee to your wife in 7 days, Johnny. It's quite the journey.
This is quite from Ireland to Austria. I mean, yes, yes.
Yeah.
Alan Lee was at my wedding. I can tell you, I was at his wedding. So what a guy he is! What a
legend. Johnny, just going back to that game and when the full time whistle comes in. Funnily enough, before you joined the call, we were talking about the corner that never happened because the referee blew the whistle. What are your memories of that, 15, 20 minutes after the full-time whistle? Do you have memories, or is it all a blur now?
No. My memories was I was my hands up in the air, and there's the picture with Darren Ambrose when I'm at the back. I've got this picture the last time I got it, and that was the final moment, you know, where obviously all the emotions running through your head, you know, and it was a relief, a satisfaction, and it was also but an emptiness somehow, because we did it, we made it. And then I jumped into the crowd, I remember, and with the Palace fans, because, you know, for me it's always very important to engage with the fans. It, for me as a football player, it was always to get the connection to the fans, to feel the club, and really not only to live for the club, but I have a responsibility, the badge I'm wearing. And I don't take this for granted, that people traveling after work, leaving their families up north or wherever they are, you know, to support their team. And so I jumped into the crowd, and it was a great, great moment. And then I went back, and suddenly, you know, the Sheffield Wednesday supporters, they came on the pitch. And one guy kicked me, gave me a punch. I looked left to Clint Hill. He actually got a hit, okay? So I was thinking, shit, I need to leave this pitch right now. So I was then a little bit I was dancing my way a little bit through the crowd. And then it was a legendary interview of Sean Derry on BBC. I jumped on his back, you know, because there's a... was a kind of a mentor for me, okay? Because we both were defensive holding midfielders, you know, and he took me really under his wing as a captain. And so I was really happy that we made it, we did it. I jumped on his back, and then all the people came from the stands, and they said, better go in into the changing room.
Bye.
Bye, goodbye, goodbye, goodbye. So
you've had your fun. It's time to go now.
yes, it's time to go now. And in the changing room, it was then we were playing our tunes, you know, and then I released all my dancing skills I was holding back for so many years. yes, no, it was like, you know, was we were sitting there and crying. Actually, there was it was really emotional because it was such a big task. And it was not only this day. It was from the day on we went into administration because we were really playing for the playoffs. And with this point deduction, we moved down the table. And the pressure was mounting because you said Jose Fonte, Victor Moses, Daniel Warnock. And the squad got trimmed down and got smaller and smaller. And it was down to us then, you know, a really small bunch of players, honest players. And at the end of the day, friends. Full stop. And you hardly come across, you know, in your football career, when I look back, how many changing rooms I've been, okay? I can tell you 2 years where I felt like I'm at home. And this was home for me. This was home. Everything was like perfect. We were like respecting ourselves. We were playing for a goal. We achieved something and we had good fun and we were friends. And we played some decent music before games.
when Sean came on the podcast, and I'm going to have to bleep this and be quiet because my two children are in bed, but he said that before the game, possibly before kickoff, he was next to you in on the pitch, and you turned around, to the Palace players and said, "Come on, you fuckers!" was that classic Johnny Ertel?
Yes. That was a classical piece. And when you move to a country, look, what do you learn?
Swear words.
Except, thank you very much. And when an Austrian comes with like an Austrian accent, and, you know, I grew up the same city as Arnold Schwarzenegger, and then you say some swear words in this beautiful English language, it sounds hilarious, you know? And so, yes. Come on, you. That was like for me also my way of like motivate other players.
And it obviously worked.
You know, swearing in a different language, it's always easier. But I can tell you, I know a lot of words.
I know, Rob, you can swear in another language, can't you?
I can speak German, so if you were in Deutschland geboren.
Oh, very nice. It's not swearing, but it's a good pronunciation.
Thank you. It's not quite swearing, no.
GCSE German with Johnny Ertel. This is great.
We could do a whole spin-off episode on German swear words, and I'm sure it'd be very popular with our listeners. You're talking about, you know, you felt at home, you were playing with your friends, and then obviously I'm sure it was a very crazy summer in terms of people's futures and contracts, and then leaving for Sheffield United, that must have been quite difficult because I guess you almost felt you were like leaving home in some way.
Looking back, yes, it was. I was then with my wife at Selhurst, but nobody called me from the whole club. The club were in bits. Nobody called me. There was no communication. Sean Derry left. Clint Hill left to QPR. And I was thinking, what's going on there, you know? And because the club was in new position, nobody knew their role. And then Sheffield United came in. They were interested. Gary Speed and Kevin Blackwell. And they made me a good offer. And I thought, I wanted to play Premier League. I felt like a Rolls Royce, and they were always pushing for promotion. And then I said, why not going up north? Because I thought they had a real decent squad. Nobody left. They made some good addition with Leon Britton back in the days and with a good striker. I was number three. And they promised me to sign another player or basically three, four more to get promotion to the Premier League. And I felt ready. After the second year, look, after this game at Hillsborough, I was made for the Premier League, for me, in my head. And so I signed up for them, but looking back, I wouldn't say it was a regret, because I did like a keynote speech here in Austria and in Germany about my football clubs where I've been. And with Crystal Palace, for me, it was like a growth, a personal growth. Because of this time at the start where I didn't play, I needed to know myself better. Okay, I grew as a person, my personality, not only my language skills, my play, I grew. This was growth. Palace was growth. And then Sheffield United was like difficult for me, because I joined a team where it wasn't like at Palace at all. It was like, unfortunately, a very bad squad, like changing room. For me, I couldn't get my feet into like the culture of the changing room. Didn't found any friends also, and I ruptured my ACL. Okay, so everything was coming together. So imagine from this 2nd of May 2010, 4 months later with an ACL rupture. And this is football life. This is football life. Okay, you have so high emotions. You think like you will conquer the Premier League in England the next year, because, of course, I can achieve promotion with Sheffield United. And then I find myself in a relegation battle again with Sheffield United. And I ruptured my ACL with like three managers. And obviously the story with Gary Speed, I rated really highly, you know, and that's the reason also why I joined this club. And so
he left quite early that season to go to the Wilds.
Yeah, he left quite early, because for me also it was like when we went Malta to a training camp with Sheffield United, he said like, Johnny, I've never seen a player like you with my, you know, my crossfield passes, you know, that was my USP also, you know, they're like inch perfect. I love these passes. And it was a game where I just pinched out like 10 and it was on the breast, you know, inch perfect. And it was a long distance, you know, and he came to me, and it was also nice for me as a player, you know, because he has more than 500 games in the Premier League. What a player he was. And then he really liked me as a player, you know, and they got into his team. I was playing center back at this time and holding midfielder, but I ruptured my ACL. And that was for me with 28 as a Rolls Royce, my second ACL. And I knew what was coming. You were 8 months out of the mix. And then with two new managers, you can believe. No good.
And Sheffield United went down that season. Is that right?
Exactly, yeah, because I was the last player they signed, and it wasn't a good management at this time, unfortunately. And the club wasn't in a good position from the top. I very much liked the chairman, but I didn't do my research about this, and the club wasn't made for me. You know, I was more like Palace. I fit to Palace. You know, it was like, look, the eagle, the colors, everything. You know, Selhurst Park. I love the south of London, and then I came up north. A club. Okay, it's difficult. You know, Sheffield is difficult, and I said to my wife, "Oh shit, Selma." So she told. And then Selma said to me, no, Johnny, look, there is like a graffiti on the wall. Everybody's a winner. And I thought, yes, let's do this. And you know what? Looking back, it was also a great step for me. And I would do the same again, because I learned another great essence for my life. With the ACL and everything, I found very close friends in the north. Okay. Very close friends. We founded a band because my wife is a singer. I was playing the guitar. We recorded some new songs. We made an album up there. Made so many good friends, but I had a really hard time from my professional performance and from my career. And I went through a really difficult time, you know, with a little bit of depression, you know, what I do next, you know, with all those emotions from Palace flying like an eagle, and then boom, you know, zero. And then after the 2 years, I got released, and I had the feeling I had unfinished business in my life. Yeah, I could have gone back to Austria easy, you know, to some clubs where I've been. It was the easy choice. But then I felt like I wanted to be a captain, you know, a captain of a football team in England. This was my unfinished business. So I said to all Austrian clubs, on the German clubs, no, it doesn't matter who's coming in. I want to stay in England. there's another chance for me. I can't leave with an ACL with just 9 games playing in a season because I was coming back from recovery. I can't leave this beautiful country. And then Portsmouth came in also in a little bit of a hard time, but they needed me, you know, because I'm this character, obviously, used to a little bit of difficult times. And then I found another home, obviously, at Portsmouth, a football club, where they needed a character like myself, you know, to be, like Neil Warnock said, a glue spokesman, giving some hope, introduce all the players. I have all the experience right now of like Palace and Sheffield, and I was bringing it into Portsmouth Football Club. So,
Johnny, that was a time when Portsmouth had financial problems themselves, I'm guessing. So you kind of danced that dance at Palace as well. So perhaps that experience was maybe what Portsmouth were looking at as well?
Yes. I was bringing some hope. You know, the club was in bits, but and I knew how it felt. I knew exactly the team spirit, and the team need to be important and working. And I knew at this time a lot of players will leave. This is normal. But still, you know, we have, and I would say we have a task to do. And I like challenges. I like challenges. And then Guy Whittingham said to me, Johnny, I would like to make you captain. You know, this is a long-term project. And for me, this was my goal, guys, you know, to lead out a team in England. It also related back to Crystal Palace when Deza leaded us out. I thought the captain, I need to be, I come from Austria, guys, you know. I mean, when I moved to Palace, the club doctor said to me, do you have a football league in Austria? How is the skiing in Austria? And do you have a lederhosen? And do you know the Sound of Music?
And you said yes to all of those things?
Yes.
And look, Mick Jones said to me, Johnny, do you know, I love Sound of Music, the musical. And I said, Mick, what is Sound of Music? You know, he said, Johnny, you are not an Austrian. I said, look, I can show you my passport. And but I did not know until I was 25 and watched. You know, I went to a musical in London to watch Sound of Music to actually tell British people that I know Sound of Music. And I got so pigeonholed with like lederhosen. I have a lederhosen, guys, at home because I've got a timber business. But it was like, you know, you get pigeonholed with like being an Austrian because everybody's flying to Salzburg and then skiing and après ski. All the British people love it, and I do love it. But it was funny actually. Yes, the start. So I was in a role of actually, I was a pioneer. You know, so. I was exotic.
At the end of the podcast, we'll play out with so long, farewell, I'll be there saying goodbye.
Hey, and you know what? My kids, I play these tunes to my kids and they were singing it. So we are also learning English.
Oh, they're definitely Austrian as well then. That's fine. They're ticking the box. Johnny, just a final question from me. Just it's amazing to hear that journey. And it takes me back to the start of the podcast where you talked about your love of English football develops from reading Nick Hornby. So that passion you had led to you captaining a established English football league club for a number of years. And then you stayed on at Portsmouth as well. So you nailed your colours to the mast in terms of wanting to live that kind of English football dream that you had as a teenager.
Yes, because with my personality, I'm a fit to English football. Yeah, I didn't have the greatest skills, to be fair, you know, with like a step over and then inch perfect in the stench. It wasn't me, you know, I was really an honest player. I anticipated passes very well. I knew what I was doing, but I learned that at Crystal Palace. I learned everything at Palace, guys, you know, a wonderful club. Because Mick Jones said to me, Johnny, you don't need to be everywhere. Come on, simplicity is beautiful, you know. So when I got the ball, I passed it to Victor Moses. Okay, he did the magic. When I got the ball, okay, Shefki Kikuchi or Alan Lee, you know, the target man. So, and at the beginning, I was everywhere. I thought, like, I need to be everywhere. So, you know, where I'm coming from, I needed to adapt to British football, and my personality to roll up my sleeves fitted perfectly to the English mentality and style, because the people loved me the way I was, because I was an honest player and very authentic on the field. So, and with a few sliding tacklings, good tackles, look, it's easy in England, as long as you really show your character and have the right, like the heart on the pitch. And the people, they know, you know, for me, you know, the English people in terms of football, they're well educated and have a good feeling because it's in your or in the British DNA. We don't have this here in Austria. okay? Because it's full of newspapers. You can dive everywhere into football, you know? And the crowd is feeling that, you know? And so I got a lot of, like, feedback from the crowd that the way I played, they liked, because it was honest.
Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely. And we loved it as well. And before I come to my final question, I'm just thinking, actually, we won't play out with Sound of Music. Why don't we play out with one of the songs that you've recorded in Sheffield? If you can send me a link to it, we'll play out the podcast at the end. Do they exist, those recordings?
Of course. And now I tell you a funny story, because my wife was recording the Greasy Cheap Booty song. And the, yes, and they played it in before a game, actually. Wow. But then, yes, it was a quite nice story. And yes, there are some good tunes actually on the album. But now we're still having gigs. You know, my wife is singing, I'm playing the guitar. We have a leading guitarist who's playing for a famous band here in Austria. And on Monday we had a gig. So, and in Portsmouth also, my wife was working in a restaurant, and I was playing the guitar as a club captain on Wednesday. We had some Thai food, and I loved it. You know, so it's great. And the music was always a big part of our journey. So it's good.
It really was the soundtrack to Palace Staying Up was The Proclaimers with 500 Miles, wasn't it? It was just that the impression I get is that played pretty much the entire time during the administration period, almost like a leadership kind of pre-game build-up thing. And it just, for Palace fans, we associate it with the video of you guys dancing on the tables and celebrating that amazing result. Is that a true reflection of what your experience was with 500 Miles?
Not only 500 Miles, Black Eyed Peas, you know, You've Got a Feeling. It was two songs. So, and whenever I am listening to the first tunes of this song, I get goosebumps, because
right.
I gave everything, guys. Once this song has been played, I gave everything in every changing room. In where we played, 100% performance dancing, because we needed that. It was so funny, you know, because look, Clint Hill, he's maybe not the giftest dancer, you know, but he moved his hips and everything, and Clint out of sudden he was moving. I loved it. And then some of the young players were thinking, oh my God, the senior players are completely lunatics. But then they started to dance as land, a little bit shaking, you know, so it was just loosen ourselves up, you know. And when you see, like, I mean, the pictures in my head, Deza or Danny, and then we had the a fitness coach I loved, and he did the breakdance. Hey, every time hilarious. Or Penny McCarthy, you know, when he was very, very loose, you know, on his shoulders. So it was great memories, to be fair. Yes.
You still have a lot of contact with those players? Do you, are there people that you still keep in touch with?
Every now and then I call up Danny Butterfield, or when I meet actually Deza in England, or when we were coming together at Palace, I spoke to Alan at LD. But you know, in football, I don't need to talk to them, because when I see them, it's like yesterday.
Yeah.
So this is the beauty of football, because for me as well, I have so many, like, players I came across my career, and we don't need to talk. When we see each other, it's like yesterday. So there's a strong bond within our team. I know exactly when I come the next time to England and we'll go up to Ellen or see him or wherever the guys are. It's like I don't need to talk to them. You know what I mean? In some, yeah. This is actually the beauty to share some experience or emotions, because
it's, you know, adversity, isn't it?
I know exactly. Then Danny hasn't changed. Danny Butterfield will always be Danny Butterfield, and it's always a great love. You know, I don't need to call him and stay in touch. Look, how are you? You know, when I see him, you know, I have the greatest time.
yeah, he is. We can confirm that. So, just really quickly at the end, then, it's probably a silly question, but I'm guessing you're obviously still in keeping up to touch with how Palace and your other clubs are doing now. Do you feel proud looking at where Palace have come in the last 13 years and the success that they're achieving right now in the Premier League?
Yes, very much. I think the club established themselves so well in the Premier League with all those years, very smart decisions, very good leadership, you know, from the top. Every time I see it, I think that a lot of clubs, you know, wish who could have this leadership from the top. And very good decisions. So overall, top. The last year I followed because I think it was a year at the Premiership I've never come across with so many teams, you know, like fear of like getting their relegation ticket. And then another great move from Palace.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic club with a huge fan base who really grew over the years, also on an international level. So quite a success story. Fantastic.
Have you been over much, Johnny, to see Palace in the Premier League? Do you get over to England many times a year, or is it few and far between?
Yes, every now and then. I came to England, or coming back to England, and see my friends, because my best man, he lives in Dorking. So, and every now and then I play real tennis with him.
Oh, like
who knows real tennis? Who knows?
That's
real?
That, like, that's the that's Queen Elizabeth. There's a Hever, isn't it? That there's like a real tennis court, I think.
There's a, yeah, with what is it called? With Henry VIII.
Yeah.
It's like there's a court, and just two Austrians are playing real tennis in the world, and I'm the number two in real tennis in the world.
Really? That's impressive.
Because my best man is
number one.
I'm number two. Who can say I'm number two Austrian?
Is that because you lose to him? Do you lose to him regularly?
Of course, yes. No, so we've good fun, and I will come back definitely this year to Palace, so to watch a game. So, and then I will let you know, because I owe you a drink, guys. You know, I was one hour late for this podcast.
Well worth it. Well,
thank you so much. It's been an absolute joy talking to you, Johnny, and going back through those memories. And really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you are welcome. Thank you very much.
Well, there you go. We said that'd be good, didn't we? What a guy, Johnny Ertel. What a character. Just a real key member of that 2010 team, where I think we've now done almost the whole team. We will do it at some point, definitely. Just to remind you, we're sponsored by Eternity Home Finance, of course, on this series. For a free consultation, email info@eternityhomefinance.com and quote the code FYP. Delighted they've joined us for the season for this interview series as well. Johnny, what a guy. I loved the bits about him being Warnock calling him the glue in the team. I thought it was lovely and actually very, very apt. And I thought it was actually pretty respectable of him to talk honestly about leaving Sheffield United and feeling like maybe it was the wrong move. And, you know, I thought that was quite raw and quite honest.
Yeah, I said at the start, obviously his chat about Palace was fascinating. And for all our listeners, that's obviously the most pertinent stuff. But you know, hearing his... his look back at his career and that move to Sheffield United, and then how he then found an upturn in his move to Portsmouth, and I think eventually becoming club captain there and doing everything he did down there. Fascinating listen. And he was just great fun. And if you need any timber from the Austrian Alps, then, you know, you've got a link, guys, as well. So there you go. Great guy. And he is heading over this season, he said to us, didn't he? So hopefully maybe some FYP pints with Johnny Ertel, which be good afternoon/evening/early morning, I'd imagine, with Johnny Ertel.
I'll take the whole day off. Clear my schedule. Great guy. I think it's rare for footballers to become cult heroes at two separate English clubs. And I think that shows the measure of his character.
Yeah.
As you said earlier, being the glue, I think, clearly was at Portsmouth as well. I think that's absolutely right. And that team needed characters. I mean, it had a lot of big characters, but it needed someone like him to glue it all together. Knew he'd be good. Just opening the call and seeing his lovely smiling face on our Zoom call was like, it just took me back to sort of 2010.
Now that we've, and still with great Nick, still clearly looking after, you know, those Filling those trees takes a lot of effort, clearly, for Johnny. So, it was great. And I think now that we've, you know, all listened to the pod, we can probably let listeners know that he was fashionably late to the call as well, just to kind of add that air of celebrity to. So,
I'd forgotten that, which I think, I don't know if it makes the edit, but I think he did mention it at the start. Yeah, he got to listen. It was on Central European time versus UK time. There was a slight sort of mix up, but when it was worth the wait.
It was worth the wait, and actually meant that listeners got an additional ad hoc pod of Rob and I talking nonsense for 25 minutes. So it's all good. It's all good.
If we do nothing on FYP, we maximise our time. We're good at
talking nonsense.
Yes. We're talking nonsense. Right, okay, well, that's our first one in the can. Jack, thanks for being here. Looking forward to next month's interviewee.
Yes. Again, another chat that took us in all sorts of directions and covered topics that I don't think you or I anticipated that we would cover at the start of the conversation. Yeah. So, yes, that was very fun. And, we've got some really good names on the list for the season. So I'm excited, Jim. And hopefully, you know, by the time May comes around, we'll have had plenty of good chats with plenty of interesting people.
Indeed. So if you want to hear that on the first Wednesday of every month, then sign up to our Patreon. patreon.com/FYPodcast, link is below, but otherwise every first Friday of every month it'll be dropping in your outbox. I should say we are playing out with a song, Jack, that was heavily mentioned during the episode. It's an absolute banger, and I actually did the edit earlier, and it was just nice listening to the whole song. It's of course 500 Miles by the Proclaimers. So I think in tribute to Johnny and all that 2010 team, we'll play out with that. But otherwise, I will see you. I'm about to say next month. I see you next week for the first part of the season.
Yeah.
But yeah, exactly. Anyway, but we're back next month for another interview. Until then, we'll see you all again soon. Bye. Bye.
Podcast Network.